You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Welcome to Flights of Fantasy, your romantasy podcast book club. I'm Anna, joined by my book besties, Kim and Christina. And together we're diving into the characters, theories, lore, and magic behind all your favorite fantasy romance books. Hi, book besties. Welcome to ACOTAR Revisited, our deep dive back into the series that started it all. We are excited to be here discussing A Court of Wings and Ruin, the third book in the ACOTAR series by Sarah J. Maas. And this is our final episode of the main trilogy that covers Feyre and Rhysand.
Yeah.
But just a reminder, we will be breaking up each book into multiple episodes so we can really take our time with this incredible story. Now, with that being said, and because we have read this series multiple times, we will be discussing each book with the knowledge of the entire series. But before we give our official spoiler warning, Kim has some announcements.
I sure do. First off, we want to thank everybody who has taken the time to rate and review the podcast. If you are looking for a free way to support us, this helps us so, so immensely. So if you have done that already, we want to send you a big, big thank you. And also, a quick reminder that if you love the pod and want even more from your book besties, we have got you covered over on Patreon. Our tier one book besties at $5 a month get early ad-free access to every episode, plus our monthly book chat episodes where we dive into a book we're not covering on the podcast, as well as book reviews, behind the scenes of our book besties reading retreat, plus so much more. And our tier two book betches at $10 a month get all of that, plus the full unedited video of every episode a day early and ad-free, and exclusive access to our SJM deep dive series, where we deep dive characters, couples, and scenes from all of Sarah J. Maas's series. We have done everything from deep dives on Moore, Lehaba, Starfall, Hylor's Meeting, and tons of couple favorite moments, as well as our Trending Pages series, where we spotlight the hottest fantasy reads that everyone is talking about. And last but not least, our Cauldron Chats, where we deep dive ACOTAR characters, lore, and world building as we go on our ACOTAR Revisited journey. So come join our Patreon family over at patreon.com/flightsoffantasypodcast. We would love to have you. Okay, let's dive in.
Okay, guys, so consider this your official spoiler warning for every single book in the ACOTAR series by Sarah J. Maas.
Yes.
Let's go.
Let's do this.
All right, so where we are picking up today's episode, it is the final battle, basically. It's the night before, the morning of.
Yeah.
And this is honestly one of our favorite scenes. The inner circle is standing together outside on a grassy knoll. Asriel has just shocked everyone with giving Elaine truth teller.
Yes.
Pin that for mastermind, guys.
Yes.
His obsidian blade that was forged, you know, from the cauldron centuries ago.
Yes.
And he tells her, it has never failed me once, which, foreshadowing for the end of the book.
Absolutely.
And Rhysand walks up to the inner circle and he's, you know, just finished putting on his armor, and it's kind of somber and a hush kind of falls over everybody. And I love this quote. I'm just going to go ahead and read it.
Read it, Anna.
So he walks up and he says, "Do you want the inspiring talk or the bleak one?" "We want the real one," Amarin said. Rhys pushed his shoulders back, elegantly folding his wings behind him. "I believe everything happens for a reason. Whether it is decided by the mother or the cauldron or some sort of tapestry of fate, I don't know. I don't really care, but I am grateful for it. Whatever it is, grateful that it brought you all into my life. If it hadn't, I might have become as awful as that prick we're going to face today. If I had not met an Illyrian warrior in training," he said to Cassian, "I would not have known the true depths of strength, of resilience, of honor, and loyalty." Cassian's eyes gleamed bright. Rhys said to Asriel, "If I had not met a shadow singer, I would not have known that it is the family you make, not the one you are born into, that matters. I would not have known what it is to truly hope, even when the world tells you to despair." Asriel bowed his head in thanks. Moore was already crying when Reese spoke to her, as is Kim.
So am I.
If I had not met my cousin, I would never have learned that light can be found in even the darkest of hells, that kindness can thrive even amongst cruelty. She wiped away her tears as she nodded. I waited for Amarin to offer a retort, but she was only waiting. Reese bowed his head to her. If I had not met a tiny monster who hoards jewels more fiercely than a fire drake. A quiet laugh from all of us at that. Reese smiled softly. My own power would have consumed me long ago. Reese squeezed my hand as he looked to me at last. And if I had not met my mate. His words failed him as silver lined his eyes. He said down the bond, I would have waited 500 more years for you. 1,000 years. And if this was all the time we were allowed to have, the wait was worth it. He wiped away the tears sliding down my face. I believe that everything happened exactly the way it had to, so I could find you. And he kisses away her tears, just like he did under the mountain.
Oh my God.
It's so nice. It's so beautiful.
Oh God.
God damn it, Sarah.
Oh, Sarah, it's so good.
Kim, you're going to be crying this whole episode.
I know. I am. Guys, get ready.
Get ready.
It's going to be nothing but tears from me. Okay, so then he says, we will walk onto that field and only accept death when it comes to haul us away to the other world. We will fight for life, for survival, for our futures. But if it is decided by that tapestry of fate or the cauldron or the mother that we do not walk off that field today, the great joy and honor of my life has been to know you, to call you my family. And I am grateful more than I can possibly say that I was given this time with you all. We are grateful, Rhysand, Amarin said quietly, more than you know.
Amarin, tiny ancient one.
Damn it, Amarin. This is not what I expected from you. God, just to say the great joy and honor of my life has been to know you. I don't care. I'll never hate you, Rhysand. Nobody can make me hate you.
No one can make me hate you. I love you.
I love you. Forever.
It's such a beautiful moment. And Sarah does these in all of her books and all of her series. There's a moment where everybody comes together and sometimes there's more than one. And she just lays down the lines.
She does.
And everybody weeps.
And it's just good every time. You know
what
I mean?
It's good every time because she makes you go on such a journey that when you finally get there and there's that found family that she writes so freaking well.
Yeah.
It hits hard.
It's incredible.
It's really, really incredible.
So before we go into the final battle, we're going to talk about Feyre's journey with the Ouroboros mirror. Mm-hmm. And there is definitely an overall theme of sacrifice throughout this series. But in this particular scene, when Feyre decides to face the Ouroboros mirror, it's not about a grand external gesture. Instead, it's a very deep and internal one. She's told that no one can look into it and survive, not because of what they see outside, but what they see within. It is the ultimate test of self-knowledge and self-acceptance, and Feyre passes, not by rejecting her darkness, but by embracing all of it. She looks into that mirror and sees every version of herself, the frightened girl who hunted in the woods, the killer who survived under the mountain, the high lady who brought the Spring Court to its knees. She sees the monster and the savior, and she accepts them both. She says, I looked into the mirror, and I didn't look away. And this moment matters because it's an internal sacrifice. She sacrifices her illusions, her need to be seen as good or whole. And by doing so, she emerges stronger. She is ready to face the cauldron, to face death, to lead. And it does mirror the sacrifices made later in this story with Rhysand giving his life and Amarin surrendering her true form.
Yeah.
It's such an incredible scene.
I love this. I mean, I feel like it's especially powerful and, you know, it sets the foundation kind of for Nesta's journey, right? In Silver Flames, like that self-acceptance.
Yeah. That's such a good point.
Yeah. I really do love this part because it's like, and you know, we've already touched upon in our previous episode that we are really setting the groundwork for Nesta. Mm. And I think that I want to pin this Ouroboros mirror moment for Mastermind later because there are some great parallels here.
Yes, definitely. It definitely is. Both sisters really have to look inward and decide, can I live with who I've been? Yeah. And not erase it, not excuse it, but really own it.
Yeah.
And in both cases, acceptance becomes the key to healing and to stepping into that power that they were always meant to claim. And honestly, this part more than anything makes me excited to see what Elaine's story is going to be. How is she going to step into her power?
How is she going to step into it? Because she's starting at such a different place. Feyre was broken in two different ways. Feyre starts ACOTAR broken from poverty and she's malnourished and she's taken on the burden of caring for her family. And then in Akamath, she's broken in a mental way, in an emotional way. Mm-hmm. And with Nesta, we see more of that emotional and mental break for her in Akasov. And Elaine, though, she's in a very different spot. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really curious to see what it is that she has to overcome. What it is, what do we not know about her?
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So anyway, it's a great moment and it's important because obviously that's what the bone carver required of Pharah.
Yes.
Bring him the Ouroboros mirror and I will come fight alongside you. I will be your monster.
She's like, okay, bet. Let's go. I've got it. Let's do this.
Okay, so that brings us into the final battle of the book.
Yep.
And I'm going to set the scene. Pharah is standing on, she's there. She notes that it's actually very eerily calm, but there's a charged stillness because instead of an immediate bloodshed, Rhysand explains, instead each army is attacking with magic. They're testing each other's, shields, magical shields. And both massive armies are facing off across like this great big coastal plain. Qyburn has every tactile advantage. He has the high ground, the cauldron, the numbers. Pharah and Rhysand and the Inner Circle are standing on top of a grassy knoll, watching over everyone, and they are vastly outnumbered. It's very obvious. But Pharah finally drops the glamour that she has been holding, and she shows two living nightmares.
Yeah,
the Bone Carver and Bryaxis.
Yep.
But not just that. Rhysand also has a little trick up his sleeve. And to Pharah's shock and the readers, the Weaver is there.
Yep.
And on top of her head,
love it,
is Ianthe's glittering blue jewel.
Yes.
I'm obsessed with this, that she sucked the life out of Ianthe and then was like, I like that jewel. I'm going to make a crown.
I'm going to put it on and let's go to battle. Let's go. Some people.
I love her. She's so terrifying, but I love that moment.
What a badass.
It's so badass. We love to see it. But what follows next is pure chaos. Soldiers are drained into husks. Others are fleeing the living nightmare that is Bryaxis while Rhysand is misting everyone.
Yeah, he is.
It's just swaths of red vapor.
That's right.
Azrael is hitting the flanks with his siphon fire. Illyrians are dropping from the skies and battling against Legion of Adders. But Qyburn is still fighting back because they still have the numbers.
Yeah.
And hope is starting to dwindle for the Night Court and their allies. But then a horn sounds from the north and three new armies charge over the horizon. And it's the Autumn Court, the Spring Court, and what? The mortal soldiers led by Jurien and Grayson.
Oh my God.
I love this. And Tamlin, who has been absent from all of the battles so far.
Yeah.
Actually is the one who dragged Baron out by the neck to force him to fight. That's what Aerys says.
Wow.
And then Aerys appears atop the knoll and he simply looks at everyone. He's like, we thought you might need some help.
Oh my God, I love this so much.
I love it, and I'm just like, I want to know more about you, Aerys.
I know. God, you know what? Good for you, Tamlin. Tamlin is the one that dragged Baron out and is like, no, you're gonna fucking do this. You're gonna fight.
As God is my witness, you are getting out there.
God damn it. But Aerys couldn't do it, so that's really interesting. Yes. Like, Aerys couldn't be the one to force his father to fight. It had to be another High Lord. And so Tamlin did that. You know what? Kudos to you, Tamlin.
He showed up. Finally, some action.
Finally, Tamlin.
Not being passive.
A little too late, but we love to see it regardless.
All right, so this brings us to one of our favorite parts, or what, at least one of mine, right?
Yes. Oh God.
Just as everyone is arriving, Qyburn starts to rouse the cauldron, and Nesta feels it first because of course she does. She's like calls to like, and it knocks her to the ground, and then she starts screaming. But she's screaming Cassian's name over and over again.
Yeah.
And Cassian is flying with an Illyrian legion. And he hears her. Because, of course he does, mate watch.
Because they're mates. How would he hear her otherwise, guys? This is a
huge battle.
Huge battlefield. Everyone, they're screaming. There's death. There's sounds all around them. And he's like, I hear my mate.
So he pivots mid-flight with his legion. And he comes barreling towards her, flying towards her, and she can barely get off the ground. And she is just, I think Pharah says something like, I've never heard her scream like that before.
No.
And she's just screaming, and she saves his life because where the cauldron attacks first is that legion that Cassian was in the middle of, and he would have been wiped out.
Yeah.
And it is such a great moment. And Rhysand, actually, it's very interesting because Rhysand looks at Nesta, and there's a moment of both anger because he's like, oh my God, Cassian is never going to forgive himself that his men died and he wasn't there.
Yeah.
But then there's also this big moment of gratefulness.
Yes.
That Nesta saved his brother.
Yeah.
And Cassian came when she called.
Guys, this scene is like Nesta's on the ground. She's on her knees. She's screaming. Cassian flies to her and then like they're on the ground together. Please go reread this scene and listen to the song The Great War by Taylor Swift.
It's so good.
You cannot tell me that Taylor has not read these books because this scene fits so perfectly.
It does.
It is the most perfect visual to go with this scene. This scene is, Sarah wrote this scene incredibly well.
It's beautiful. And Cassian lands and he grabs Nesta's face and he's looking her over, looking to see like, where is the wound? Where is it?
Yeah.
And you just know there is no wound. Her heart would have died. Her heart would have broken if Cassian had died.
Absolutely.
But also, guys, this is also when the bone carver dies.
This is kind of sad.
It's kind of sad. And he was kind of a creepy weirdo, but
yeah.
The quote is really sweet. It says, "But the carver, I could have sworn he looked toward me as the cauldron's power crashed into him. Could have sworn he smiled. And it was not a hideous thing at all." He supposedly appears, because you know how he can change his appearance. He appears as this big Illyrian fighting soldier. And it was a great moment. It was not everybody could survive. We chose the bone carver. I'm okay with the bone carver dying, but...
Sure. It is sad.
Yeah.
But I'm also glad that he did not choose to appear as Nyx in this battle.
That would have been traumatizing.
Would have really not enjoyed that whatsoever.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Okay, so moving on, Nesta offers to use herself as a distraction. She is going to rally her power on the opposite side of the battlefield to lure the King of Hybern out, and then Feyre and Amarin are going to go nullify the cauldron. They're going to lure the King of Hybern away from the cauldron.
Yes.
Cassian is going to go with Nesta to protect her, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And Rhysand is pissed because he knows it is basically a death sentence for either of them, and he tries to order Cassian to stand down. But Cassian refuses. He says, "You gave everything, Rhys. You went through that hell for us for 50 years. You think I don't know what happened? I know, Rhys. We all do. And we know you did it to save us, to spare us." He shook his head, sunlight glinting off that dark winged helmet. "Let us return the favor. Let us repay the debt." "There is no debt to repay." Rhys's voice broke. The sound of it cracked my heart. Cassian's own voice broke as he said, "I never got to repay your mother for her kindness. Let me do it this way. Let me buy you time." "I can't," Rhys said. "You can," Cassian said gently. "You can, Rhys." He gave a lazy grin. "Save some glory for the rest of us."
"I never got to repay your mother."
Mother. God damn it.
Cassian had nobody. He was a bastard born of nobody is basically what they say. And he was broken and he had no home and it was cold. And Rhysand's mother took him in.
I love when Rhys says, "I can't." And Cassian's like, "You can." There's something about like the "I can't," because that's what I would say too. It's like, I can't do this. I'm not ready.
I'm not ready. And guys, pin that moment because that's one of the things Nesta says later to Cassian is, "I can't.
I can't."
Oh, God, I love this man so much. I honestly think I'm more of a Cassian girly the more I read. I mean, obviously, Rhysand is everything and my end all be all, but Cassian feels more obtainable, which I realize is Delulu, but...
You know, I mean...
There's something about him that feels a little bit more obtainable.
Rhysand is perfection and it's hard to see yourself with somebody like that.
Yes.
And Cassian feels a little more human, even though he's the Lord of Bloodshed and like this massive Illyrian warrior, but...
But I also love that about him, and I...
Oh, totally.
Love the grab the headboard, so...
Oh, God, it's good.
I love it so much.
I can't freaking wait to read that.
Okay,
here we go. Kim's gonna cry again. Everybody get ready.
Yep, things are not looking good, but hold on to your hats, everybody, because reinforcements are coming in. Just when things are looking grim, Feyre, Rhys, and Cassian take to the skies because out on the horizon, they see an approaching legion, but it's not Illyrians, and they panic, thinking it's Hybern. but it's Draken and Miriam, who have been MIA.
Nowhere to be.
For a very long time. Nowhere to be found. They didn't send a little dove note or an owl.
Nope.
They were just like,
we're coming. They're like, we're here.
They just showed up and everyone panics because they're like, who the fuck is this other army?
Right.
I mean, I would panic too.
Yeah.
But not only is it Draken's flying legion, but below is an entire armada of ships, more than Highburn ever had. And among those ships are human forces from all over. And guys, leading them is the last person anyone expected, but Feyre's father. The man who once turned away from his daughters now returns with an army behind him. His ships are named after them, the Feyre, the Elaine, and the Nesta. And he's standing on the Nesta, by the way.
Yeah.
He's sailing straight into the war for the girls he once failed. And also we have Vasa.
Yeah, she's there.
The Firebird Queen. She's trailing sparks and flames and she cuts through the sky and her curse has been temporarily broken. But I love this. And I love what Draken says this about Papa Archeron. He says, he told me that he's got three daughters who live here and that he failed them for many years, but he would not fail them this time. And then he continues, he named his three personal ships after them. Draken said with a smile, and there, sailing at the front, I beheld the names of those ships, the Feyre, the Elaine, and leading the charge against Highburn, flying over the waves, unyielding and without an ounce of fear, the Nesta, with my father, our father, at the helm.
Shut up, y'all. Come on. You're telling me that doesn't get you at all?
Papa Archeron, who has literally been absent from majority of these books.
Oh, God. But it's like, it just, he told me that he's got three daughters and that he failed them for many years, but he would not fail them this time. And he's on the Nesta, and the Nesta is the one leading the charge, and it's unyielding without an ounce of fear. And it's like the fact that he chose to have the Nesta be, it's just so sad.
The one that's leading it. I know. And it's a really important moment because Cassian's holding Nesta in the skies and she sees this. So both her and Feyre see his father entering on the ships. And
oh God.
It is such an important moment, especially for what's to come that we're going to get to. But I think as parents too, we're very frustrated with him in the beginning of the series. And
yes,
we don't even really go on a journey with him because he's not in the book.
No.
But the fact that he shows up here with an army.
Yeah. And I think we're meant to infer that that's what he was away doing all of this time. I don't think he was actually just...
He wasn't being the prince of merchants.
He wasn't just working.
Yeah.
I think he was actually trying to gather this army to help his daughters. And oh man, I never thought I would cry over that man. I thought he was so useless and so frustrating, but there's just something about him showing up like that and like naming it just... It gets me. It gets me every time.
It gets us every time.
Okay, so here we go. Feyre and Amarin at the cauldron take one, because yes, there's multiple takes. So Feyre and Amarin sneakily scale up this rocky outcrop, and when they feel Nesta rally her power on the opposite side of the battlefield and the king takes the bait and winnows away to go to Nesta and Cassian, Feyre and Amarin get to work, except our tiny little ancient one was a sneaky little thing, and the spell she's casting, it doesn't actually nullify anything.
Nope.
Oh, Amarin. But before Feyre can figure out what the hell Amarin is up to, the cauldron basically takes over her mind and body, and she's mentally thrown across the battlefield. So we're going on a magic cauldron ride, everybody, and first up on that magic cauldron ride is to see Rhysian fighting.
Y'all.
Oh!
He's supposed to be terrifying, but somehow it turns me on. This was very sexy.
This is sexy. This is the quote. I saw Rhysand in the thick of those breaking lines, blood spattered, fighting beautifully. I saw him assess the field ahead and transform. The talons came first, replacing fingers and feet. Then dark scales, or perhaps feathers, I couldn't get a look at them, covered his legs, his arms, his chest. His body contorted, bones and muscles growing and shifting. The beast form Rhys had kept hidden, never liked to unleash, unless it was dire enough to do so. Before the cauldron swept me away, I beheld what happened to his head, his face. It was a thing of nightmares, nothing human or fey in it. It was a creature that lived in black pits and only emerged at night to hunt and feast. The face, it was those creatures that had been carved into the rock of the Court of Nightmares that made up his throne. The throne not only a representation of his power, but of what lurked within. And the wings, Highburn soldiers began fleeing. Hellion beheld what happened and ran too, but toward Rhys, shifting as well. If Rhys was a flying terror crafted from shadows and cold moonlight, Hellion was his daytime equivalent. Gold feathers and shredding claws and feathered wings, together, my mate and the High Lord of Day unleashed themselves upon Highburn.
I fucking love this.
I love it. This is so cool.
It's so cool. And this is a part of himself that he's always kept hidden. He's terrified of showing anybody this monster, right? Because every High Lord has a creature that they can unleash, right? We know, we've seen Tamlin's beast form many times.
Yeah.
It makes me, I wonder if Feyre has one.
Oh.
As High Lady.
I wonder if she does.
I mean, she can shapeshift, but I wonder if she can, you know, shapeshift into anything.
You're right.
Also, I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say that literally, I think Rhysand could play the fiddle and I may even still find it sexy.
I think we would be into it with Rhysand.
I mean, if he can make a monster sexy,
yeah,
I think I might be okay with him playing the fiddle.
I don't think I'd get the ick from Rhysand playing the fiddle. I think he could do it in a way that was sexy.
Yeah.
You know, I agree with you, Edo.
Do it.
I love it. We're going to go on record saying that Rhysand could make fiddle playing sexy.
Yes. Okay, so next up on our Magic Cauldron ride, Feyre gets ripped away from watching the battle unfold with Helion and Rhysand, and she's taken to where the cauldron is seeking out Nesta. Mm-hmm. So that is where it wants to go, and that's where we end up.
Yeah.
And it is, it's not going well, you guys.
No, it's not.
Nesta and Hybern and Cassian are there, but the King of Hybern has Papa Archeron in his grasp.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got him by the neck and a dagger under his throat.
Yeah.
And this final scene is
really
heartbreaking and beautifully written. What the father says, he's looking towards Nesta.
Yeah.
I loved you from the first moment I held you in my arms. And I am so sorry, Nesta. My Nesta. I am so sorry for all of it. Please, Nesta said to the king, her only word, guttural and hoarse, please. What will you give me, Nesta Archeron? He says. Nesta stared and stared at my father, who was shaking his head. Will you give back what you took? Yes, she says. Even if I have to carve it out of you. Our father snarled. Don't you lay your filthy hands on my daughter. I heard the crack before I realized what happened. Before I saw the way my father's head twisted, saw the light freeze in his eyes. Nesta made no sound, showed no reaction as the King of Hybern snapped our father's neck. I began screaming.
Oh, God.
This is the moment that truly breaks Nesta.
Yeah, it is.
This is the moment that she can't come back from at the beginning of Akasoth.
Yeah.
And I think it's because it's the father she hated.
Yeah.
The father who she thought never actually cared for her. Him sacrificing himself for her is really what undoes her because she doesn't feel worthy. She's never felt worthy. Nobody hates Nesta more than she hates herself.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
And I think she's like, Elaine, yeah, you can sacrifice yourself for Elaine. Feyre, absolutely. We might have our differences, but Feyre sacrificed for our family for years and years.
Absolutely.
You could sacrifice yourself for her, but me, what have I done? I'm worthless. But Nesta, this is the final quote. Nesta knelt before our father, her face a void. She gazed into his still open eyes, closed them gently. Hand steady as stone, Nesta leaned forward to press a kiss to our father's blood-splattered brow. And when she lifted her head, the cauldron thrashed and roiled, for in Nesta's eyes, lining her skin, uncut power. Nesta took in his broken body, the pain in Cassian's eyes, and angled her head. The movement was not human, not fey, purely animal, purely predator. And when her eyes lifted to the king again, I am going to kill you, she said quietly.
This is so badass.
Point that finger, Nesta.
Point it, baby. I love it.
I love
it. Okay, so then Nesta goes absolutely feral and she rages against the king. She has so much untapped power and it is truly magnificent and terrifying.
Terrifying.
To behold. But she does lack finesse and control and the king brutally attacks Cassian, leaving him broken and bleeding on the ground, which brings us to one of our favorite Cassian and Nesta moments in the entire series. Y'all, it's a get up moment.
It's a get up.
It's a get up. Nesta is trying to get Cassian to get up and he's like, I can't. Oh God, I'm just going to read this scene. Nesta gritted her teeth, trying to haul Cassian up once more. A broken sound of pain ripped from him. Go, he barked at her. I can't, she breathed, voice breaking. I can't.
I can't.
The same words Rhys had given him. Cassian grunted in pain, but lifted his bloody hands to cup her face. I have no regrets in my life but this. His voice shook with every word. That we did not have time. That I did not have time with you, Nesta. She didn't stop him as he leaned up and kissed her, lightly, as much as he could manage. Cassian said softly, brushing away the tear that streaked down her face. I will find you again in the next world, the next life, and we will have that time. I promise. The King of Hybern stepped into that clearing, dark power wafting from his fingertips, and even the cauldron seemed to pause in surprise. Surprise or some feeling as Nesta looked at the king with death twining around his hands, then down at Cassian, and covered Cassian's body with her own. Cassian went still, then his hand slid over her back. Together, they'd go together.
Guys.
Oh!
I love this moment.
I do too.
It's so beautiful. I mean, I think this is them, it's not them accepting the mating bond, but it's a moment where I think they both think it's their final moments. And she's like, I want to go out with you. I don't want to live without you.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Oh, I love the quote that he says to her. And it's such a full circle moment because it's very similar to when Feyre and Rhysand are under the mountain together and they're facing death.
Yes.
They want to go together. And Nesta and Cassian definitely are echoing that same devotion to each other.
Yes.
And then guys, our freaking sweet potato, Elaine.
Sweet potato.
She saves the day.
She does.
She saves the day. Elaine stepped out of a shadow behind him, the king, and rammed Truth Teller to the hilt through the back of the king's neck as she snarled in his ear, don't you touch my sister.
Oh my God, Elaine.
Elaine.
Hello.
Fuck yes, Elaine.
Thanks for joining the party.
Wow. A little late, but like you're here and you're making an entrance. Also, and this was new to me because I was under the understanding that Elaine was actually one that killed the king. And actually, she does stab him through the throat. She doesn't kill him.
Yes.
She wounds him, but he's far too powerful and he has a lot of healing abilities and it did not actually kill him.
Yes.
I was trying to give Elaine her flowers. I was trying to say that it was Elaine, but it was actually...
It's not. It's actually Nesta. He is still alive. He's blinking and looking up at Nesta, and Nesta's the one that ends it on no uncertain terms.
Right.
And she is terrifying in doing so.
Yes.
It says, Nesta looked down at the king before she made the final pass, his hand still trying to rise to claw the blade free. See, he's still alive. And in Nesta's eyes, it was the same look, the same gleam that she had that day in Highburn when she pointed her finger at him in a death promise. She smiled a little, as if she remembered too. And then she pushed the blade like a worker heaving the spoke of a mighty grinding wheel. The king's eyes flared. Then his head tumbled off his shoulders. Nesta, Cassian groaned, trying to reach for her. The king's blood sprayed her leathers, her face. Nesta didn't seem to care as she bent over as she took up his fallen head and lifted it. Lifted it in the air and stared at it. Into Highburn's dead eyes, his mouth gaping. She did not smile. She only stared and stared and stared. Savage, unyielding, brutal.
Wow.
I mean, y'all, goddess of death. Are you kidding? It is so savage.
That is freaking savage. She scares me.
She's terrifying.
She is.
I feel like Cassian's saying her name like, come back to me.
Right. Nesta?
Honey, Nesta?
Are you okay?
It's giving Killing Khan this sense of blind rage and she can't come out of it.
Absolutely.
And it takes her mate.
It does take her mate.
It takes her mate. But it's very effective. I love this. This always reminds me of Princess Bride. For some reason, this whole scene with the father and everything. And she's like, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father.
My father.
Prepare to die.
To die.
Except that it's very heavy and dark.
Right, exactly. But like, make it darker.
Oh my God. Okay, Kim, take us back to Amarin.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy. But Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Yeah, so Amarin is finally doing the unbinding spell. Okay, so she's going to be unbound from this body that she's chosen. And this is such a surprisingly very tender and sweet scene that she has with Varian. So it says, Amarin smiled slightly at me at Varian. I watched them for so many eons, humans. In my world, there were humans too. And I watched them love and hate, wage senseless war and find precious peace. Watched them build lives, build worlds. I was never allowed such things. I had not been designed that way, had not been ordered to do so. So I watched. And that day I came here, it was the first selfish thing I had done. For a long, long while, I thought it was punishment for disobeying my father's orders, for wanting. I thought this world was some hell he'd locked me into for disobedience. But I wonder if my father knew. If he saw how I watched them love and hate and build and opened that rip in the world not as punishment, but as a gift, her eyes gleamed. For it has been a gift, this time with you, with all of you. It has been a gift. And Varian is begging Amren to not do it because he loves her.
He loves her. It's so sweet.
It's so sad. And Amren looks at him. I watched them most, the humans who loved. I never understood it, how it happened, why it happened. I think I might have learned with you, though. Perhaps that was a last gift, too.
Guys, like, who is this? Amren!
Who is this woman, and what have you done with our tiny ancient one?
I think Varian, honestly, is bringing out this side of her, and I love it.
I love it.
I also love the moment when they first appear, when the Summer Court and the Night Court war camps finally join together, and it's right before the scrying, or right after the scrying.
Oh, right.
And Varian walks into the camp, and he's disheveled, and he's, like, looking around, and he's only looking for Amren, and Amren sees him.
Yes.
And she jumps his bones.
Yeah. Yeah, like, she does.
Legs around the body, arms love around it. His neck. They are making out hardcore. It is not PG.
No.
And I can't remember if it's Tarquin or Rhysand. One of them turns to the other and they're like, well, I guess we'll have to draw straws for who gets them at what holidays.
Yeah.
I love it so much. I love it so much because Tarquin and Rhysand are now best friends.
They're best friends.
They're besties.
That's FOF canon that Tarquin and Rhysand are best friends now.
Yes. So on this note with Amren, we are going to go back to Sunday school, everyone. Welcome to class.
Yes.
So Feyre understands that Amren has to do this, right? That she has to go into the cauldron. It's the only way to end the Hybern in an army. So Amren throws herself into the cauldron. But before she does, she leaves these parting words. When I am free, do not run. It will attract attention.
What?
Which, I don't know, it's giving you in Jurassic Park when I always think of this with the T-Rex and they're like, okay, don't run.
Yeah.
It's attracted to fast movements. And Amren's basically like, I'm going to be a little T-Rex and yeah. I'm going to be really big and scary.
Well, it's like sharks. Sharks are attracted to like splashing.
And blood.
And blood.
But, I mean, listen, Kim and I, we're not going into the water and we're not entering Jurassic World.
No.
Even if it became a theme park.
Absolutely not. I don't care if my kids begged and cried for years. I'm never stepping foot inside of a theme park with dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs. I do love that movie and it's one of my favorite movies.
It's a fantastic movie.
I actually really love it.
I would not be attending that theme park.
Not be attending that theme park. You could not pay me.
No. No, no.
We know how that ends.
Nope.
Okay, so I want to read this to you guys because this is how Amren is described when she comes out of the cauldron.
Yes.
And again, remember, listeners, that what SJM has said is that Amren is basically an archangel of death, biblical style, okay?
Right.
So it started far, far beneath us, as far as she had gone to the earth's core. We had only enough time to throw ourselves behind the nearest rock when it hit us. The cauldron shattered into three pieces, peeling apart like a blossoming flower. Then she came. She exploded from that mortal shell, light blinding us, light and fire. She was roaring in victory and rage and pain. And I could have sworn I saw great burning wings, each feather a simmering ember spread wide. Could have sworn a crown of incandescent light floated just above her flaming hair. She paused. The thing that was inside Amren paused, looked at us, at the battlefield, and all of our friends, our family still fighting, as if to say, I remember you. And then she was gone, spreading those wings, flame and light rippling to encompass her, no more than a burning behemoth that swept down upon Hybern's armies. They began running. Amren came down on them like a hammer, raining fire and brimstone.
Fire and brimstone.
Fire and brimstone, y'all. And also, I want to note this from earlier in the book, when Amren is describing who and what she used to be. She says, I was a messenger, a soldier assassin for a wrathful god who ruled a young world.
Yep.
Angels are God's messengers, guys. Okay? And they rain fire and brimstone. The feathered wings.
A halo.
A halo. She has an incandescent crown of light around her head. It is a halo.
Sarah's like, I actually can't be more clear.
I couldn't be more clear.
No.
So I don't know what you want me to do.
I don't know what you want me to do. I've made it very clear what she is.
Yes. So that concludes our Sunday school lesson with Anna. We have wrapped that up.
I love it.
I'll let you know if there are more in the future books.
Yes. Let us know what you thought of this. I thought it was fantastic.
But y'all, we can't have nice things. Yes, Amren saves the day, but oh dear, the cauldron has been cracked in three places, and there is a lot of dark, weird shit that is leaking out of it.
Yeah.
Which everybody agrees is a bad thing.
Right.
So Rhysand looks to Feyre and reminds her that Amren once said she was a conduit. Pin it. Pin it for mastermind. And that she could harness magic through herself and channel it into something else. Which is exactly what Rhysand proposes Feyre does. More specifically, take his power and channel it into the cauldron and reforge and mend it. And Feyre does. Go ahead, Kim, walk us through this final part.
Okay, I don't know what Feyre thought was going to happen with that. I don't know what path we thought we were going to go down with this, but she does decide to do that. And when you reread the book, it is very clear that Sarah has been foreshadowing this ending. Rhysand will always sacrifice himself to save the people he loves. I mean, it's honestly probably like a little bit of a complex at this point.
Yeah.
And I do think we could work through this in therapy. I think therapy would be very helpful for him to maybe like work through this so that we don't keep trying to kill ourselves.
Yes.
But that's for another discussion another time. It's really a beautiful but very heartbreaking scene. And this is what Feyre says. He gave it to me. Rhys handed over everything. I was a bearer, a vessel, a link. I love you, he whispered into my mind. I only leaned back into him, savoring his warmth even in this non-place. Power shuddered through him, wrapped around the cauldron. I recited the spell over and over and over. The first crack healed, then the second. I felt him tremble behind me, heard his wet rasp of breath. I tried to turn. I love you, he said again. The third and final crack began to heal over.
Y'all.
Oh, no.
I mean, the I love you. I think Pharaoh's like, later she says, the I love you was a goodbye.
Goodbye.
And he won't, she actually tries to turn around to look at Rhysand and he won't let her.
No.
Because he's like, I'm dying slowly.
He's dying and I don't want you to stop it.
And so she does. She finishes mending the cauldron and she turns around. And this is what it says. What I saw, Rhys was sprawled on the rocky ground, wings draped behind him. He looked like he was sleeping. But as I breathed in, it wasn't there. That thing that rose and fell with each breath, that echoed each heartbeat, that mating bond, it wasn't there. It was gone. Because his own chest, it was not moving. And Rhys was dead. Y'all, that's the end of the chapter. And I remember reading it for the first time being like, pardon my French.
I'm so sorry. What now? Rhys was dead?
Dead? I like was like, hell fucking no. And I like turned the page. And the next page is, I had only silence in my head, only silence as I began screaming, screaming and screaming and screaming. The emptiness in my chest, my soul at the lack of that bond, that life. I was shaking him, screaming his name and shaking him. And my body stopped being my body and just became this thing that held me and this lack of him. And I couldn't stop screaming and screaming. And it's written so well because, Kim, as a first-time reader, do you even remember what you thought when you read this?
I don't remember, but I think we had gone through this too many times with Harry Potter and
other
various series where I was like, there's no freaking way that she is going to kill off Rhysand.
No way.
There's just no way that Sarah would do this.
She can break our hearts.
Absolutely.
She does. She absolutely shatters our hearts in lots of other ways in various series.
And she
does
kill characters that we care about, honestly.
Yes.
I don't need to get into that. But I was like, no, this can't be. I was so in shock and I was like, what am I? I don't even know what I'm reading right now. I don't even know what's happening. And I was just trying to like read so fast.
Yes.
Oh God, it was written so well. But I think I knew, okay, well, we can't do that. And if you do that, I'll never read anything you write ever again.
Yeah.
So
Mom, never.
You'll be dead to me.
That's it. You're dead to me.
So Feyre remembers what the Suriel said. Stay with the High Lord. Remember when the Suriel was dying?
Yeah.
Suriel says again, stay with the High Lord. And she does. And she feels it, barely a whisper, but it is there, the bond between them. And she clings to it. And then she looks to every High Lord and screams, bring him back. I love that she's just ordering them around.
She's like, bring him the fuck back.
I'm sorry. Like, excuse me, ma'am.
I love it. They're all like, okay. Well, that was like a one-time thing that we did.
This is supposed to be like a very special thing. You saved us. You broke the curse. So like we gave you a drop of our power.
Yes, yeah.
You can't just order us around. But we all know if the High Lords are there, then they can do the same exact thing that they did for her under the mountain. And they can bring Rhysand back. And surprisingly, with Feyre not using very good manners and screaming at them, they do it one by one.
They do.
Even Feyre, because she's now a High Lady, she can give a drop of her own power.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes to Tamlin. And Tamlin is the last one. And he looks at Feyre and he gives a drop of his power to Rhysand and he says, be happy, Feyre.
Honestly, that's all we needed.
For me, that's enough.
That's fine. That's enough.
I'm good with that.
I'm good with that.
I don't really need anything more. I think it was a very sweet moment.
Love it.
So not only does Rhys come back, but Rhys brings back Amarin.
I feel like this is a very Heavenly Fire moment upon a reread.
Absolutely.
The first time I read it, I was just too excited that everyone's back. But then upon a reread, I'm like, okay. I guess.
Okay.
All right. Well, we're just appeasing the audience at this point.
Right. This is fan service.
This is fan service.
Of course, we're happy that Amarin is back. We would have been really sad if she never came back. But
right. It
did kind of feel like the sacrifice was for naught because he was like, look who I found rolling around in the cauldron. I just brought her back up.
I said, hitch a ride back. Varian's awaiting.
Varian's like, thank God. But now Amarin is just plain old Fae. She is no longer this like being that she once was. She is just a plain old High Fae. Her eyes are no longer silver lined. Okay, I have to tell you, I always picture Amarin as like older. Old.
That's so funny because I feel like she's like faceless in a lot of my...
I kind of agree with that.
In a lot of my images.
Who did you say she reminded you of?
She reminds me of, in the movie, the cartoon, The Incredibles.
Yes.
The little...
With the short
dark hair. And she's
and the
really,
glasses.
Yes, and she's really funny and very assertive and...
Yes.
And domineering in a weird way.
Absolutely.
That is who I picture as Amarin. So like everybody else is a real life person. Amarin's this cartoon.
Yes. 100% that is how I picture her. Like this tiny... You can't call her a tiny, ancient one and me picture like a 25-year-old. Guys, I can't do it.
No.
I know that that's like technically sort of what she's supposed to look like, but to me, I just picture her as that cartoon character.
Yes, absolutely. 100%.
The short little hair and the glasses and she's like walking around.
But guys, okay, so that wraps up the main part of it. But after all of the battle and everyone is settled and they're burying their dead and they get Papa Archer on and there's, you know, little sweet moments that happen. But basically in the final chapter, mm-hmm. the courts all gather together and try and rebuild. And they actually meet, I think it's at the Archeron's household in the human realm.
Mm-hmm.
And tensions are high because everyone's trying to redraw lines. And, you know, there's the idea that they have to build a new wall and that sparks fierce debate. But they're at least talking and they're trying to set a foundation and lay new groundwork for how they can move forward after this war so that it doesn't happen again.
Sure.
And Feyre also, for the first time, tells her story. All of it. I mean, the poverty, the pain, her first love loss with Tamlin and mm-hmm. and the love that saved her, Rhysand. And she shares what she saw in the Ouroboros mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, you know, she's opening the door for an honest conversation and having peace talks between the Fae and the humans.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally return home to Verlaris afterwards in Elaine.
Oh, God,
yeah,
you guys.
Okay, sorry. I had to include this because it was just hilarious to me, given how much the three of us joke about Elaine. And guys, we know we don't hate her. It's just,
no, of course.
Honestly, it's funny for us at this point to kind of rag on her.
It is. But you have to agree, her character doesn't have the most depth right now, okay? Like, what? It's not our fault.
It doesn't. And this literally adds to it. This adds more fuel to our fire. They get back and they have all of these. After all of this conversation and the treaty, they arrive. And one of the last things in the book is that Elaine announces that she wants to plant a garden because, quote, the world needs more gardens. And Feyre's like, yes, I think it's true. And I'm like, okay.
Feyre, don't enable her.
Feyre.
Don't enable this bullshit. Like, come on. I mean, fine. Do whatever you want, Elaine. But it's just
the war's
like,
over. Go plant a rose garden.
Sure. That's what the world needs is more peonies. Whatever.
Yeah, more peonies. I love a peony.
I love a peony.
You know what fucks? A peony.
You know what I'm a slut for? A peony.
Slut for a peony.
A slut for a peony. That's something Elaine would say, I think. Elaine is like, I'm a slut for a peony, you guys.
We were on our trip to see Rebecca Yarros in New York City, and we were like sitting down. We were so tired. We've been up since really early in the morning, and we had to stay up late to write our outline for us recording in New York City together.
Yeah.
And we ordered burrata and wine at like 10:30 at night.
Which is late for us, guys.
It's very late for us, and it shows up, and... And I just started eating. I go, God, I'm a slut for burrata.
For burrata.
It was just so random.
It was so funny.
Kim was like, what did you say?
Slut for burrata. Now we're like, a slut for peonies.
We're a slut for peonies. And so is Elaine.
And so is Elaine. And we love that.
We love that about her. Okay, so a few little loose threads that are left for us to kind of go through in the next book and maybe in Elaine's book.
Yeah.
So Vasa's curse is still there.
Yeah.
And she has to return to her lake. Lucien remains somehow like mysteriously connected to Vasa. I feel like there's so much more that happened in him going to get Vasa. And I would love to find out more about what that entailed. Tamlin disappears, but not before Rhysand thanks him.
Mm.
And then Feyre actually sends a note with one final message, and she says, thank you. I hope you find happiness too. Which
I love that.
That's a nice, let's listen. It's I be happy, Feyre. And she's like, I hope you're happy too. I hope you're happy.
Happy.
We're not going to do that. No, we won't hit that note.
We will stop.
We will. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I think it's sacrilegious. I can't even attempt to sing.
Oh God. I love that movie.
Oh God. It's so good.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget, so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Okay, so Sarah is laying the groundwork also for Akasov with this final quote with Nesta. Farah's observing and Nesta is not okay. It's already, the downward spiral has begun.
Yeah.
And it says, Nesta looked toward the stairs and I noticed the object she clutched in her fist, the small wooden carving. I couldn't make out what manner of animal it was, but I knew the wood, knew the work. It's their father's.
Yeah.
And it's one of the last things that they have of his, this little animal that he made. And Nesta looks up the stairs to where I think they all used to sleep, because this is at the human house. But she's not engaging. She's totally shutting herself off. I mean, we are really setting the groundwork for her book.
For sure.
And then the final bit of the book is we get Rhysand's point of view.
Yeah, we do.
And it's a really brief, but it's super sweet moment. And it's just him and Cassian and Asriel.
Yeah.
And the girls are off, I think, in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And him and Asriel and Cassian are sharing a drink, and Rhysand hears Feyre's laughter.
Yeah.
And he looks up, and it almost seems like he's lost in thought.
Yeah.
And Asriel just turns to him and he whispers, "It's real." All of this is real. Like, we survived. And it's such a great, beautiful, it's the perfect ending, honestly.
It is. It really is.
Okay, so guys, that wraps up our final Akawar episode.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's the culmination of Rhysand and Feyre. And next, we're really moving into Cassian and Nesta.
Yeah.
And so it feels kind of bittersweet. Like, we still have more. I don't mean more. I mean, we have more.
We don't have any of that.
Yeah, we have M-O-R-E. We have more to come.
Yeah.
But it does feel like we're saying goodbye to two characters.
It does.
Thank you for coming on this journey with us. But we also have our mastermind section now.
Let's do it.
So, all right, book besties, welcome to our favorite little corner of the episode, Mastermind, where we peel back the curtain on all the brilliant foreshadowing, plot threads, and Easter eggs Sarah J. Maas has been planting since page one. A quick spoiler warning from here on out. In addition to ACOTAR, we will be referencing the entire Throne of Glass and Crescent City series. So if you haven't finished those yet, cheers and happy reading. We'll see you next time. And if you're all caught up, let's go.
Let's dive in. So we're going to start with a really fun fan theory, which is the Suriel Kaltane from the Throne of Glass series.
Yes.
A lot of people believe this. It is a little bit silly, but just fun to run through. So the cloak. Obviously, Selaena's cloak is a big aspect of Kaltane's character and journey. Selaena leaves her cloak for Kaltane when they're both in the dungeons, and Kaltane keeps a scrap of that cloak, and she gives it to Aelyd and Queen of Shadows, like, wrapped around the word key, and gives it to her and is like, give this to Aelyn. And Aelyd's like, I don't know who that is, but okay.
Okay.
I will take it. And we all know that a big way to trap the Suriel is to give it a new cloak.
Right.
And so people think that fascination with this cloak that the Suriel has is because Kaltane, like, held onto Selaena's cloak, and it was a gesture of kindness in a time when people were being horrible to Kaltane.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about the death quotes for both Kaltane and the Suriel. So this is Kaltane's. As she brought it all crashing and crumbling around them, Kaltane smiled and at last burned herself into ash on a phantom wind. And this is the Suriel's. As warm light whisked us away, I could have sworn that the pile of ashes was stirred by a phantom wind.
I mean, that's like practically the same sentence.
That's practically the same sentence.
Ash and phantom wind. I love this. I mean, I'm not sure how it all connects logistically.
Agreed.
But I am very much here for this beautiful parallel. And
I know.
If for some reason Kaltane died and her soul then got transported to Prithian and
became the Suriel.
Also, the words the Suriel says, you know, make the world a better place. It's very TOG. That's what Aelyn's whole thing is.
Sure.
And Kaltane is the stranger, you know. I think she was a dreamer herself, kind of, and caught in this nightmare with Parrington. And
yeah,
it's awful. I think there's a lot of similarities.
I think there is. I do just want to note, though, I did look up the phrase phantom wind.
Okay.
Because we all know that Sarah, I love her, but she repeats herself a lot.
She does. She does.
With stuff, with the growling and the purring and the crooning and the lint.
The flicking of the lint.
She does use phrases. One might say a little too much sometimes. So
I agree.
The phrase phantom wind is used twice in Throne of Glass and five times throughout the ACOTAR series. So more than likely, this is just a phrase that Sarah likes to use. I don't even really know what phantom wind means, to be honest with you. Like, either there's wind or there's not wind.
What I think of a phantom wind in these types of situations is there's no actual wind, but yet it's blowing.
It's windy, but there's...
The trees are not blowing, but somehow something blows that away, like a spirit or a being.
Sure.
That's what I think.
But, you know, like Anna said, I love the idea that Kaltain's soul lived on somehow and got to meet Feyre and have that connection with her.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to jump into some Crescent City tie-ins specifically. So the ordeal. Listeners, if you don't remember what the ordeal is in Crescent City, it's a rite of passage for the Fae. Mm-hmm. And once they come of age, they have to complete two tasks. The first one is they visit the Oracle, and the second one is they complete a task or a trial designed to assess and potentially empower them.
Yeah.
And its difficulty varies based on their power and lineage. So it can be as simple as overcoming an illness, or in Bryce's case, it's her when she saves Syrinx from the knock at the end of CC1.
Correct.
And to us, Feyre facing the Ouroboros mirror is her ordeal.
Absolutely.
It's her looking and having to overcome the darkest parts of herself.
Yep.
And Nesta's in Akasoth would be her hike, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, God. Oh, God.
That or the stairs, actually. It could also be the stairs.
You know what? Yeah.
It could be either of those. I don't know. Yeah,
that's a good point.
Because both are symbolic for her character.
Absolutely. They're both huge moments for her.
I don't know. I can't. Maybe we'll have to, you know what? We will come back to that after we read Akasoth.
We will.
We can have a nice little discussion on it.
I would say that her rock bottom is the hike.
Is the hike.
Because of what she did to Feyre.
That is her rock bottom. But I wonder, but it's supposed to be,
I think the stairs is a more physical.
Yes.
Representation of an ordeal.
Yes.
So I guess it's kind of maybe how you...
Depends, yeah.
Depends on your interpretation of
the ordeal. I'm curious to see what her mental state is after each of them. Like, I'm going to pay attention to that.
Let us know what you think Nesta's ordeal was. Was it the stairs or was it the hike?
Yes.
Please let us know. Okay, there's a really cute little tie-in between the Winter Court foxes and the otters in Crescent City. So I went and looked up the Winter Court foxes, and they are described exactly the same as the cutie little otters in Crescent City.
I love this.
This is what it says. This is Akawa. War chapter 66. White foxes scuttled about underfoot, bearing what looked to be messages strapped to their little embroidered vests.
I love it so much. It's so cute.
God damn it. I would never want to live in the Winter Court. I hate the cold, but oh my God, that's freaking cute.
I love that so much.
And we know that the otters in Crescent City are the exact same way. They are messengers. They have little vests and you can like put messages on them and they run around the
little
city.
Little yellow vests and they just scurry around.
So cute.
It's so cute. I love it.
I am Bryce when it comes to the otters. I'm like, I like have cute aggression about the otters. I just think they're so freaking cute. So I thought that was really interesting that Sarah had the same kind of little messenger cutie animals in Crescent City and Rapture.
Yes. Okay, so one final little tie-in into Crescent City is Rhysand and the mind reading with Jurian specifically.
Oh.
Y'all, he does this in CC. In the final CC book, when Bryce shows up in Prithian,
yeah.
And literally, I think he makes a comment about, I won't read into her mind because it's a violation or something. And I'm like, is it? You have a stranger from another world in your home. We would have saved us 200 pages of spelunking if you had just looked at her intentions.
God damn it, Rhysand. We're not saying ruin her mind, like break her.
No, don't break her.
I'm just saying get in there and just see what it is.
Root around a little.
Just come on, Rhysand. Like this whole, it's so interesting. I'm like, why are we picking and choosing when you want to be like.
Where's this line that you. This
I don't know.
Imaginary line that you draw.
But he like moves the goalpost every time where he's like, no, it's okay in this distance, but not in this distance.
I'm not
like,
okay here.
Rhysand, just do it. Like, God, I did not want to be in those caves for as long as we were.
No, absolutely not.
Okay, so let's move to some more TOG tie-ins. So when Rhys tells Feyre, you do not yield before she goes to rescue Elaine, this is a callback to what Aelin's mom says to her when she's in the Iron Mask and she's being tortured. And I just, I love this because to me, Rhysand and Aelin are very, very similar characters to me. I think that Rhysand displays a lot of the same characteristics of Aelin.
Yeah, I agree. I think he really gives main character energy. And I think there's a lot of self-sacrificing that he reminds us so much of Aelin. You know, both of them are so fearful of losing the people that they love. And it's not necessarily that they don't trust others. It's like they don't trust themselves and what they would be like if they lost those people.
Absolutely. Yes.
And they both have to learn how to work with others. And Rhysand's is just done on a shorter timeline because obviously with Aelin, we get 8 books, basically.
Exactly. So the next one we're going to talk about is the Ouroboros mirror similar to a witch mirror in Throne of Glass? So this is what Manon says about the witch mirror. You can see the future, past, present. You can speak between mirrors if someone possesses the sister glass. And then there are the rare silvers whose forging demands something vital from the maker. Manon's voice dropped low. Dorian wondered if even among the Blackbeaks, these tales had only been whispered at their campfires. Other mirrors amplify and hold blasts of raw power to be unleashed if the mirror is aimed at something. And so obviously these aren't being described as like physically similar.
No, they're not, yeah.
But the mirrors in Baba Yellowleg's wagon look different from the one that Aelin and Manon use, so maybe the magic is more imbued into the said mirrors rather than just being forged.
I think it's interesting, and I know that the Bone Carver says that the Weaver used to have the Ouroboros mirror. It was hers, and she would look into it daily.
True.
And I wonder if it was something that she brought with her from her home world. You know? And so where is their home world? What were they? They were death gods. Well, we know that there were gods in TOG world.
Right.
At some point. So like, who's to say, how did this magic get crossed?
Right. Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, I do wonder if that'll, I don't know. I'm not saying the Ouroboros mirror is going to come back, but
sure,
it's an interesting little tie-in. Okay, so Agreed. The last thing we want to talk about is this theory that the Archerons are from the Starborn Fae lineage.
Yes.
Which would make them descendants of Thea, just as Bryce is.
Exactly.
So Azrael has never given his blade to anyone before. He's never even let anyone touch it.
Nope.
But he gives it to Elaine and he says it will serve you well.
Okay.
I know.
God damn it.
I know. I hate it. I hate it so much.
I hate it. That's fine.
I hate it.
Okay.
But he gives it to Elaine and he says it will serve you well.
Yes.
So just keep that sentence. So then the Bone Carver says this to Feyre.
Mm-hmm.
Clever that Fey warrior. Her bloodline is long gone now, though a trace still runs through some human line. He smiled, perhaps a bit sadly. No one remembers her name, but I do. She would have been my salvation had I not made my choice long before she walked this earth.
Salvation is such an interesting word.
I know, it's an interesting word. Yeah. I want to remind you that the Star Sword in CC is the sister sword to Truth Teller, okay?
Correct.
But in Prithian and Akatar, it's not called the Star Sword, it's called Gwydion.
Yep.
And we know that only Starborn Fae can truly wield the Star Sword to its full potential, okay? So again, Azrael giving it to her and saying it will serve you well. So pin that. So who's to say that Thea's lineage didn't just disappear into Midgard, but what if there was other people that were descended of her and they trickled down in Prithian and into the human lines, right?
Yes.
Centuries ago. And this would then make sense if Azrael felt some pull to lend Truth Teller to Elaine if it somehow recognized her for what she was.
Yes.
And also Amarin calls Feyre a conduit.
Yes. When we were going through this part in the main in episode, I was like, oh my God. She's a conduit just like Bryce is a conduit. Come on, you guys.
Bryce is a conduit and it's such a big part of her character and she's Starborn Fae.
Yes.
So I don't know. And I also don't know why is Feyre a conduit. I don't know who's to say. Was it just this heavenly fire moment or is there more to it? I don't know. I mean, guys, this is all just fun and speculation and
sure,
you know, we just have fun reading into it. But it's very interesting that that's used, that Elaine is given Truth Teller, that also Nesta and Akasoff is able to reforge and make new swords.
Yes.
Right?
Very important.
And then Gwydion is a sister sword. It's a star sword.
Yes. Yes.
And Bryce is a conduit. Feyre is a conduit. There's just lots of interesting things that, and there's a magical, there is this ancient Fae whose bloodline mysteriously somehow disappeared into the human line.
Into the human line. Guys.
It would be very interesting.
It would be a very cool way for Sarah to continue intertwining these worlds in a way that makes sense.
In a way that's also digestible and doesn't have to become this huge crossover.
Yes.
You know, it's a little callback.
Yes, which I like that.
I like that too.
I think it's a more subtle Easter egg, which feels very SJM.
It feels very SJM. I feel like that's why I liked what she did with Aelin and Lydia.
Oh.
That was perfection. That was all I needed.
Brennan of the Wildfire.
So good.
So good, you guys.
Oh.
It's fantastic.
Okay, guys, that wraps up. That's it.
That's it for Akawar. We're done, you guys. Oh my gosh, this was so fun.
So fun, so fun.
Yeah.
All right, listeners. Okay. Well, cheers and happy reading.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, friends, that wraps up another episode of Flights of Fantasy Podcast. Don't forget to join our book club community on Instagram and TikTok at Flights of Fantasy Podcast, where you can share your thoughts, theories, and favorite moments with us and fellow listeners. We'd love to hear from you. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Your support helps us spread the magic of romanticy to even more book lovers. Until next time, keep dreaming, keep reading, and remember, every good story deserves to take flight.